Okay, good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night, and it's time for Joyous Fasting. We're working our way to the book, The Joy of Sacrifice, by E.J. Gold. The subtitle is Secrets of the Sufi Way. Where we are, we've spent a few weeks on some of the introductory material, but in the last several weeks, we're working our way sacrifice by sacrifice. Now, there's a little bit of housekeeping I want to do, and I have an example of it, and then we're going to start, and we're going to start in a very specific way. The sacrifices are not events that we read about, and then we forget as we go to the next week. These are sacrifices that are very much cumulative in nature. And what we really want to strive for is that several of them become a way of life for us. It may be that some of them don't appeal to you or don't work for you, but to have a few of them as a bedrock is the key here. And where you take those particular sacrifices and you delve into them with some depth. In that regard, I want to point out that last week was sacrifice number 5, and that's called Sacrifice of Tendencies, a Life of Ritual. And so during the week, actually just today, we had a posting by Eric, and I strongly suggest that you go back to that chapter on the website wingsofchaos.com and read what he put down. He's chronicling some of his efforts to work with that particular sacrifice and the concept of ritual and how it's starting to penetrate into his life. And so it's becoming a tool for him. It's a tool that is, in a sense, an everyday place that he can go to. And you'll begin to see, as we delve into this chapter tonight, why that's so important. And so, go back as you're progressing, as we go to the following weeks and things like that, then let's see how you're doing with those sacrifices. What did I do with my glasses? Okay. So, this particular week, we're on sacrifice number 6. And Ivan, can you read the chapter title or the sacrifice title, please?
The Sacrifice of Control, Life of Passivity.
Very unusual chapter. You start to read through this chapter, and it's just, what's he talking about? But, as usual, I think it's important for all of us to take a moment, as I say, to arrive here. If we've spent the time to log on and to come here, or dial up on the phone, let's also arrive, whatever I might mean by that. So to help us get in the spirit of this, actually, this particular sacrifice, Ivan, I'm going to read something that was written sometime in, probably the 14th century, I would imagine. And it's a book, it's from what I call the huge geniuses of the mystic, Christian mystic life from Spain. And this particular one, I've actually, over the years, I've read from it before. And this one is called The Book of the Lover and the Beloved. And the author is Ramon Llull. Okay, it's really something. I'm just going to take a little brief read into it, get a feel for it, kind of suspend your judgment for a moment if you can, just to, in a certain way, let the words of this brilliant, giant, genius, mystic hit your ears and see what happens. And I'm just reading in a certain way, it's an arbitrary selection. But so here we go. Between hope and fear, love made her home. She lives unthought, and when she is forgotten, dies. So unlike the pleasures of this world are her foundations. There was a contention between the eyes and the memory of the lover, for the eyes said that it was better to see the beloved than to remember him. But memory said that remembrances bring tears to the eyes and makes the heart to burn with love. The lover asked the understanding and the will, which of them was nearer to the beloved? And the two ran, and the understanding came nearer to the beloved than the will. The strife between the lover and the beloved and another who loved him fought and wept, till peace and concord were made between the beloved and the lover. Sighs and tears came to be judged by the beloved and asked him which of them loved him more deeply. And the beloved gave judgment that sighs were nearer to the seat of love and tears to the eyes. He stopped there. Somehow, that relates to our chapter tonight, somehow. But you'll have to tell me now. I'll be looking for answers. So, here we are. We're working with The Joy of Sacrifice by E.J. Gold. I'm on page 190, and this is sacrifice number 6. Now, one learns to give up control, not only in one's ordinary manifestations, such as physically, mentally, and emotionally, but one must also give up all control of others, of the environment, of attempts to influence others through action, drama, or emotional ploy. One must give up all imaginary powers in order to achieve even a small measure of freedom. And the author continues, to make the sacrifice of control, one allows all one's actions to be directed by another who is responsible for one during this stage. This includes all actions, waking or sleeping. Even one's toilet must be guided to some degree by another. One behaves as if totally helpless and unable to do even the smallest thing. One allows another to guide one in everything until the desire for control dies away. I'll pause there. You got some help for us here, Ivan?
No.
No.
Certainly not.
Well, let's see. There are, on the wings of on the site, under this particular sacrifice number 6, there are a number of comments. And our friend J.W. says, what's the difference between developing a taste for not control and the idea of losing control? Is that the same? Music making, happens to be a guitarist, music making is a completely controlled system in which chaos can be made within it while still having beauty. One can have controlled chaos and shamanically reel it in and out of will. Abner. One can have controlled chaos and shamanically reel it in and out at will. It's a vehicle for one to lose control. Is surrender of control actually an offering up for the higher law of control?
Well,
Right. That's good. I like that formulation. The one about chaos.
I answer.
Music. You answer? Oh, let's hear the answer.
For me, losing control, the idea of losing control, is from the machine an effort to contain chaos. Developing a taste for not control means one is willing to ride the wave of chaos. When allowing for chaos to be there, we develop a skill to ride the wave of chaos. Thus, you see the adventures of great jams in music, spontaneous peak reached in poetry, an impossible solution found in business, or an utterly unique pathway to an impasse with a child. In the midst of that chaos is the root of creativity, but it seems to manifest only when we perform a certain form of surrender. So,
well, that surrender is a good word. I think there is a big difference between surrender and losing control. But surrender is relinquishing, giving up, backing off, of control.
Wait a minute, say that again.
Surrender. Surrender is the act of giving up, backing away, letting go of control. Where the other is losing control, it's just that you're trying to grip something or hold on to it, or digging your...
Let's get into that a little bit more.
In.
So,
yeah.
Surrender is...
Well, I think that music is a terrific way to talk about this, because I think this is... Yeah, you do want a higher, you want to relinquish control to something higher, which is where your habits kick in. It's like you can surrender. If I can surrender,
yes.
If I give up having to design everything, to know ahead of time what I'm going to do with organize, structure, rationalize, mentalize, design everything, then I'm going to allow something else to structure, flow, design, form, so on and so on. But is it going to be without me completely? That would be a very hard to imagine. You know, it's going to be, it's like I have to have a habit. I have to develop the habits that are going to allow me to do what it talks about in this chapter, is being able to do.
Yeah.
Not to control, you know, not to make something the way it has to be, and I want it to be this way, and so on. But there's something about an ability to do with
yes.
chaos.
Yes.
With the chaos present.
Now, Spinoza uses an interesting term. He doesn't use the term surrender, the guy wrote in Latin, so it was his great translator. But he uses the term acquiescence. Acquiescence is like an active sense of surrender.
An active sense of surrender. Yeah, okay.
It's an active sense of surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm surrounded by musicians, and every musician. Excuse me, that's not true. Musicians of a certain caliber are able to get to a place in their music where they can flow with that music into, I mean, I've seen it hundreds of times. So what allows them to get to the place where they can allow, we'll call it the sense of chaos for the moment, okay? What allows that to occur? Any musician can do that?
You can ask a musician in the audience. We do have a musician, at least one musician in the audience.
It depends on the reason you're playing. We're getting some answers. Can a beginning musician that just picked up a guitar for the first few weeks do that?
Yes, he could. It's a matter of attitude. It's not a matter of technique or how musical you are. It's an attitude.
Okay. Which could be an attitude of acquiescence.
Exactly. Regardless if you're a great musician or not, the point is, it's not the outcome. It's just how you participate with the group in that act of surrendering.
I was watching a very wonderful jazz guitarist, and she's playing with Phil Douglas, who we know as a wonderful bassist. And they got into this particular area of their music that was just spectacular. And I was certain that it had been, they were playing some written music.
Yeah, rehearsed or something.
That they had worked together. When they went, they broke. I was talking to Bill and he said, no, we were jamming. It was a pure jam. But what allowed them to get to that level and just let it go? We were watching Toots Tillemans and who was it, Kenny Werner play. He was a great pianist and an unbelievable harmonica player. They would just go to places that were just unbelievable. They probably couldn't write it down possibly.
Yeah. And David, if I may add to you, one of the most, one of the greatest schools in jazz was the Ornette Coleman Create Free Jazz. And that was the principle of free jazz.
But
to explore that chaos and that freedom.
Why Ornette Coleman and or Miles Davis, for instance, able to do that? They were doing that because they, in part, because they also had a remarkable base of competency.
Right. I was calling that, that's what I was calling habit, the body of habits.
That's what I was trying to get into.
So there's a body of habits that that will kick in when you relinquish control. When, you know, if you give up control, and I believe that, maybe it's a little premature to mention that, but that's exactly the dichotomy that's presented at the end of this chapter is when you relinquish, when you give up control, you give up the machine, you give up the ego dominance, are you going to become a gibbering idiot, or are you able to do at that point? Is there something?
Are you able to do?
Is there something, you have the habit that actually enables you to carry out some action or some course, let's say some goal-oriented activity?
In a certain way.
Point.
Like you see it in every single field, like in surfing or basketball, and the people will say that they're in the groove,
yeah.
They're in the zone, they're playing in their zone.
Right.
You listen to a particular drummer, and you know that everybody that has ears to hear will know they've hit their zone. And you back off and you let that unfold. So, some of us may or may not be musicians. So, what does this therefore mean? And Wade goes on to say, beautifully put, with that surrender comes to certain levels of trust and faith. Perhaps a bit of that is needed to learn to like not control and just rise. I find it easy to do with music, almost effortless. In life, it's another story.
Good. Yeah, that's good.
So that was wonderful, yeah. Distinction. So, body of habits. Can we begin to build a body of habits that, in a sense, we can go to. We can go to the body of habits when we are, in a certain way, lost. We've lost our bearings. And what does it even mean to lose your bearings? Pity the poor person that never loses their bearings. So, a couple of things that we need to do is one is we need to find a sensitivity of what it means when, in a sense, what I call the sensation of chaos is upon us. When we can sense it in the air. Okay, so this requires us to begin to sense in a very different way. Now, if we are working in a certain way, then we can begin to develop that sensing. All right? So two things are required now. Two things are required. The development of the sensing. Can you sniff it out when that's about to happen? When there's an important moment. I was with somebody on the weekend, and then it was time to go. Things were complete for both what we were there to do, but I couldn't leave. I wanted to leave. I wanted to get back home. But for some reason, I stuck around. And about 10 minutes later, a whole breakthrough came for this person that neither one of us expected. A clarity that was hanging around in the space. You know what I mean? Make sense? And fortunately for me, and I was just a listener, I had certain habits built up that allowed that to continue and to energize the space, both. All right? Both of them. Now, we're going to continue reading with some of the posts on the site. They're very good. And Aria tells us, currently I feel very stuck in this very spot. Struggling with this sacrifice, this unknown. And part of it is that I don't actually know if this is where I am. Life of passivity. By this is not meant to be unattentive, but rather to move fully from the essential attention. So we develop a taste for not control. Is there another way for you to act? Yes. Find it in action during your day and life. There is a psychological aspect to this activity, however. I am indicating that there is a new way of action, a form of action that emerges from the essential self. Listen to that. What a line. A form of action that emerges from the essential self. Something like right action.
Right.
This is excellent. This is a hard idea, concept for me. I don't really understand what it means or how to do it. Or maybe not to do it. I ask myself every day, what then am I to do? I am hoping to get a better understanding of that life, what life of passivity might be. Passive in chaos and maybe not be effectively. So, Aria is pointing, asking us there, what is the source of action then? From where do we move?
Well, you go through this. I totally go with what Wade Jamal was saying. Yeah, I mean, it's easier to talk about this, like for me as a writer, you know, playing music with people, it's encapsulated. It's like you get a feeling for the freedom, for the confinement and the freedom and the ego and the not ego and the teamwork and so on. And then you walk out of a music, you know, you just walk out into your ordinary life, like, okay, how do I get past it? How do I get away from control? You know, driving my car and going shopping, talking with my family.
I remember
one. The persona is operating.
The persona will attempt to Shanghai that space.
Will
attempt to Shanghai it and take the energy and harvest the energy for its own purposes. for the purposes of the literal linear machine. But if we can hold on to that energy even a little bit, so if you get into a space, can you attempt to hold it? For instance, Ivan said when he sat down that he wasn't really ready for this class. Remember that?
Yes.
But look at him. How vibrant, huh? How focused and vibrant he is.
He's hydrating.
But the point of it is, we will leave this space in about 35 minutes. We will be in that space that I'm talking about. We right now are working from that space. There are four people in this room right now. When we leave it, when I walk through that door over there, that portal, and then the next portal, one of my disciplines is to hold on to the flavor of this moment. That's, now you begin to get a sense of why I read from this book.
Yeah, that book has this sort of flavor, yeah, fragrance of not control.
It brings into this idea, the horror of being, of loving the beloved. And of course here we're talking about, you know, the yearning for the absolute. And when you start to get a taste of that, you are totally out of control. You're helpless. What can you do? But surrender and acquiesce to the power that's coming from you. Spinoza says that when we get to this space of freedom, we understand and learn these inner habits, that we in a sense are acting as spiritual automatons. We are acting from another source.
Spiritual automatons?
We are not. Yeah. And that we are acting from these divine habits. And we're being compelled to move in that manner. So, I'm still bothered by this particular point here. That we're not all musicians. So, if I'm not a musician and I can't get into that space in music, what am I supposed to do? How do I fulfill and start to investigate this chapter?
Well, what does anybody...
It is an example.
Well, he's saying, so
let's give me another example.
How do we get out of it? How do we get into something else?
So let's say that you're lying, you're sick in bed, and you're not a musician.
You're sick in bed and you're not a musician. Well, good, at least you're not missing any gigs. So.
That's right. And you can't, can you still work? You can? Someone says yes. I don't understand how. Because you're not out there, you know, interacting with society and getting all this stuff going on and these challenges. So, outside ourselves, there's a sense of guidance.
Our commenter here, go ahead. There's a sense of guidance that comes from outside ourselves.
Okay. One allows another to guide one in everything until the desire for control dies away. So that's the last sentence in the previous paragraph.
Yeah, you know, so this brings up this really interesting question about everything that we're reading in this book, which is that you take that literally, you know, or is that a code for something else?
Tell me, what's it a code for?
For saying what Matthew was just saying, that you're relinquishing the control and having the essential self or some higher principle take control. Anyway, I mean, it strikes me that it could be both literal, since for the monastery situation, and figurative.
And figurative. And so what do they, what is the common thing we hear from all of the Christian mystics then? Not my will, but thy will be done. What do they mean by that? This is what they mean. This is what they mean, what you're just saying, that the guide shows up, right?
That shows up sometimes, or shows up
so we have
unpredictably.
So we have to practice.
Yes, right.
We have to practice. That's what this is. If this isn't like suddenly you have it, you develop the body of habits, Ivan. That's why you, what you said was so powerful earlier. You develop a body of habits that is sufficient to guide you when you allow yourself to be in the active sense of surrender, the active sense of surrender, or as I call it, acquiescence, okay? Acquiescence to the higher. Let's
David,
read on a little. Yes, Simon.
Great, yeah, I mean, following in close of what you're saying with Ivan, it could maybe, just that we are there to maybe drop some idea of those habits that we may develop that may help us in those situations. I have one maybe is
okay.
What I would use is to practice to let go of expectations.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
What do you say, guys?
Well, you now flip it around and make that into a positive statement. Because this book is called The Joy of Sacrifice. I'm going to read another from another posting that was on the site. The joy of sacrifice, not the burden of
sacrifice.
Okay? Why is it a joy? What are you talking about? And it's hidden in what you just said, Simon. And flip it. Now you said, what did say it again? You said what? Drop expectations.
Give up expectations.
Flip it around. Anybody, what's the positive statement of that same comment? Instead of give up expectations, how do you stand before the moment of chaos then?
I have presence. In the moment.
Presence in the moment. Observer. Is there a good word that we can put in here? What do kids do? Little kids.
They just play spontaneously.
But you give a little kid a block. A little block or a toy. What do they do? They
just to be at, it will be just to be at awe. At awe. You know, like a surprise for what the outcome is. Whatever that is.
In awe.
Right.
And wonder. Okay. So irrigating and harvesting the truth of wonder. I tell you, you don't actually know what's gonna happen next. Don't. And if you look at that which is before you even right now, and I point this to Aria too. That, yes, it is frightening. And in a certain way, frightened we should be. But we're not helpless. We're not helpless. Okay, so what did we just hear? I just want to, don't lose your thought, please. Don't lose your thought. But I want to just emphasize what Simon said to us. He says one thing is, to give up expectations, and he flipped it around and he says, to be in a state of wonder, okay? Let's find some more of those. So you go ahead.
Well, let's see.
I'm sorry.
I have this thread. There's another one to flip, you know, what you were talking about, like the fear and anxiety, let's say from the machine point of view. I mean, I have a tendency to be, first to make me anxious, to be like not in control, you know, like to not be rational, you know, to look to have the mind start to malfunction or to be overwhelmed by perceptions or you know not being able to guide myself and so on. Fearful, but the flip side of that is to be is like the joy of sacrifice.
Cool.
So it's to be immersed in the present.
Yes.
Spontaneity is to be. I lost the thread there somewhere.
Okay.
It's the just close. What I was thinking of is I posted in one of the previous sacrifices about this, the idea that, you know, like, again, like a musician, like I'm most familiar with some of these states of being, from working with creativity and imagination, you know, from being in, like, creative spaces and like, giving up. It's absolutely true what, who was it? What Wade Jamal was saying
yeah.
about music. It's like to break new ground, like to actually break into something creatively, you have to give up control because it's not your machine, it's not your rational mind that originates this kind of stuff. It comes from like an aesthetic flow. It comes from another realm, which is more essential. I don't know if it's my essential self, you know, where it comes from, but it comes from some essential place. But so the, you know, this whole feeling of spontaneity,
mm-hmm.
like what I posted about, I think, I can't remember which sacrifice it was. Occasionally, once in a while, I feel like also when I go downtown, and I have a fixed agenda. Well, I have to go shopping, and I have to be at the college at 2 p.m. I've got to get gas in my car, and there's something I needed at the stationery store and so on. That's all rational and fixed. It's like that the total control thing. But, like, even in a program like that, sometimes I go downtown and then something unexpected, like Simon was saying, something unanticipated, you know, remarkable or unusual happens. In other words, that program can be not all that happens.
Correct.
In that day, there can be the place for chaos or essence experience in that program. And it may all be the program, or it may
it
not.
It may.
But, yeah.
Yeah. And that's another thing. When you are in that space, when you are in that state of openness and creativity, it changes the world.
Yeah. That strikes me. This is, for me personally, this is a very important idea that not only in music or not only in poetry can I have an aesthetic, you know, like a sort of essence kind of experience, but going to the stationery store, that printer ink, oh, I could also have a chance encounter. I could notice.
You will have a chance.
I could perceive something. I could notice something.
Because it's happening.
Yeah, I could notice something that I had no anticipation that I was going to notice and so on. And that's where that idea, from some, again, I think I posted about this. I love this word from some other tradition going along with what Simon was saying. There's, I picked up this idea, which is preconceptionless.
Yeah.
Is another word for
having one.
No expectations, but it's a translation of something. It was a Milarepa text. And this is like, this has stayed with me for years. It's like, yeah, that's what I would like. When I go down to the grocery store, I have a bunch of errands to do in town, I would like to carry that state of preconceptionless with. So, not so that I forget to buy the ink at the stationery store, because I don't think that's necessary, but so that the mechanical, like, pre-programmed day or calendar is not all that happens, not all that I experience.
Aimlessly.
Yeah, Matt is bringing up. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Matt's recommending aimless wandering.
Active, skillfully aimless wandering,
yeah.
But open to it. Interestingly, the field that I've chosen is literally a field of business. And I have been in so many circumstances where I do apply this.
Right.
And I find it's not so much that I'm a great business person, but I find solutions in the space for the or whatever is called for in the space, as long as it can be held open. If someone has an agenda and the space is clear enough, you can tell right away. Okay. For such a short chapter, we're barely one page into it. I don't know
David,
what happened.
Why can't we get through these chapters?
I know. It's just a couple of pages. Then, continuing, the EJ says, one is carried on a litter to obligatory and allowed to take part only passively. For instance, I was carried on a litter into this room.
Okay.
On a small dais.
You were, I see.
One eats and drinks in the same way and makes no preferences. Makes a choice even by sign of preferences. A food, drink, action, rest, or other areas in which one may be taken during the day. Now, important. When one emerges from the corridor of madness, one will be left helpless as a newborn babe. Well, what is that like? What is that newborn babe? How then, how does it move? How do we then move if you are in that state? Except that one will be able to do only those things which one is able to do with one's muscles. But these abilities in the muscles must be habitual with one. Well, what does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
I think it's a great, fantastic formulation. In fact, it makes me so excited about the fact that I'm getting up in the morning and making my bed.
That's
it's
right.
Like I could be, I'm getting to the point where like I can barely be cognizant or whatever, but it's like, oh, I'm going to make the bed. So, hey, I'm training my muscles.
It's like you know you're going to do that.
I may have dementia after a while, but I'll get up and make the bed. That'll be great. At least I'll keep my good reputation.
So, it says, must be habitual with one. It must be habitual with one. If one is not prepared oneself with handcraft movements in mind, one must be prepared to accept this temporary condition of utter helplessness.
Well, now that's good, too. There are some really good clues right there. Handcraft movements in mind.
It's as if we are preparing ourselves for something. Some event or process.
Well, I love this thing. What is it that handcraft movements and mime all have in common? They have in common. Mime, what do they all have
in common? Handcraft and mime.
What are you talking about here? What do you use for all those? Yeah, well, it's muscles. So that's all the muscles thing. Those are all... Mm-hmm. All training of giving you habit, giving you muscles and tendons. Yeah.
It's literally some of the
okay.
Training the muscles. It's a place to go, even in the depths of those spaces when they get very, very, very difficult. At least you can do that. Simon, are there comments for you to read, please?
Can you hear me there, or I am mute?
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, there are... Let me see. This goes back. I'm going to read this. We pretend to be in... This is Molly. We pretend to be in control, and then believe the pretense. In reality, we are not, even if we have created, organized, and fashioned our lives. There is still the fact that it is a dance completely beyond us, and we don't know what is coming up from moment to moment.
Excellent.
Praying Mantis is suggesting here that someone with enough cooking skill, they can improvise a dish or a meal.
Good. That's another suggestion as to the development of a body of habit.
Right. Molly keeps going and says, our essential self brings the magical sense of delight, even if everything goes completely awry.
Awry, yeah, it goes wrong, right.
And Praying Mantis do stand-up comedy, is suggesting some other things, work on higher mathematical problems, or write poetry. What else? Molly Midway says, I'm hoping to learn some topology enough to use it as a way to help the essential self have a language to understand its fascination with existence and non-existence and how spaces work. Thanks for your presence, Aria. I add there, I think all this that we are talking about is a very important aspect of an impeccable action.
Who was that?
That was him.
That's me.
I like that impeccable action.
So, once again, we start with small steps. We start with where we can. We start with what we are able to start with. Why should one prepare in this way if one is now making muscle preparations with handicrafts and movements? Because one cannot be sure these have become habitual until the essence emerges from the corridor strip of psyche. But by then, it is too late to do anything except either endure helplessness or enjoy the ability to do. Now it makes some sense.
Well, wait a second.
Okay, before you go there.
Yes.
So now, and there's a very, very strong posting by Terry Lundell. And he talks about this idea that, and his struggle with working with sacrifice, and he goes on, let's see here, we keep our focus on the sensation and presence of the essential self, the only thing that has any reality anyway, just as suggested, it's a form of action that emerges. Referring back to what Aria said. From it, without the machine's chronic need for control, maybe this is why he named the book Joy of Sacrifice and not The Pain of Sacrifice. Maybe if we keep our eye on the ball and let ourselves be consumed by it, the new habits of the real part of us will carry through. Let's read that last sentence.
Yeah, I like that.
Maybe if we keep our eye on the ball and let ourselves be consumed by this emergence from the essential self, the new habits of the real part of us will carry us through. Of course. You sacrifice. No pain, no gain, that sort of thing, and force and whatnot. And there's a truth to it in that realm. But we're talking about a different realm. Every sacrifice that we've discussed so far, and we're on number 6 right now, has a flip side to it. It has a side of
the joy side.
It has the joy side. That's what we're discovering here. Boy, is it tenuous and delicate. And I want to... Aria answers, Harry, but I want to jump to the last one before I came out. It's by Sandra Eggers, and she says, we understand passivity to be a situation in which we are attracted to the other, even as if to a lover or to beauty, giving up imaginary powers becomes easier. And then she goes on. She quotes, "To make the sacrifice of control, one allows all actions to be directed by another." And she poses, "Maybe is not necessarily referring to a person, but to another through which it is easy to assume persons in the dialogue. But maybe is referring to a different type of other."
Other, an otherness, other place.
He refers to it. So, this is the discovery with this sacrifice. As we suspend the need, the control. And all that is a moment of observation. When we see us trying to control the situation, the idea isn't necessary to give up control right then and fight that. But maybe there's another way of being right in that moment. Maybe you don't have to control the conversation. Maybe you don't have to control what's going on around you. Maybe you're put, we're back to our poor person who's in bed, and they're not even a musician. And that person sitting there, they can't control their life, can they? Maybe they have a horrible back pain. They can't, what can they do? But enjoy, in a sense, and acquiesce to the moment that they're in. And once you taste that wonderful sense of acquiescence in some very difficult moments, then the taste is even better. It's more frightening. So what a sweet taste that might be. So what else do you have to read for us there, Simon? Molly?
There is not much. Just Molly says the machine will team up with the essence in a win-win situation.
Yes.
That's it. No more comments here.
Okay. That comment is very important. When the machine teams up with the essence, at that point is where we have, as we discussed at great length in HBM, Human Biological Machine by E.J. Gold as well. We discuss the concept there of the mutual reciprocal transformation. Okay. So when the machine is passive in its will, it's providing the essential self to the particular form of energy. And in an apparent passivity, there's actually the growth of a certain kind of life in the essential self. Yeah?
Yeah.
So, I encourage everybody to post their comments, and there's some questions that various people are asking that maybe they can use some help on, and some observations that you might have, or ways that you see that you're going to bring this forward. Ways that you see you're going to work on this. We've got some great examples from a number of individuals, but how you're going to interpret it, that's exciting too. The next chapter, Sacrifice 7, is the sacrifice of relationships, the life of arrogance. So I'm looking forward to that. There's some relationships that I'm trying to get out of. And maybe, I could assume that's what it's about, right, Ivan?
Yeah, that's a cheap trick, though, David.
Great.
I'd like to make a comment before we leave the sacrifice of control. For this particular chapter, it strikes me that there is a real appropriateness to Mayor Baba being the icon, the picture on the front of this chapter with it, and he's saying to be quiet, the gesture is to be silent, because it seems to me it's that Mayor Baba's being evoked there because he had this whole period where he was just stopped talking to all of his disciples. He became completely silent, and also he took on somebody know what that was called when they went wandering, what Matt was talking about? He left the ashram or whatever, and he just took all his disciples and said, well, that's it. We're going to do aimless wandering. And they just went out begging for years, I think, in the countryside, wandering around India.
So,
and it was all about this abandonment and control. It was like that. It was a lot like that.
A couple of years ago, I did some writing on the idea of the begging bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And think of these individuals in India. In India, you see it. Here, you don't see it as much. But you do in certain ways. But these guys, they leave life. And there's a number of great examples that are coming to mind. They leave life. And they rely on their begging bowl to sustain them. That's what they rely on. They don't rely on, oh good, I have a 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm.
They rely on the essential motive of their moment and to see what the world brings to them at that time. Yeah?
Rely on the goodwill of others.
Well, but you rely on your magnetism that you create from your essential self. And by giving up, in a sense, the need to control, something will come. Do we believe this?
That would be the idea, that the magnetism that the essential self will create.
Yes.
Amazing.
If we get out of the way, something becomes possible.
That's quite amazing.
Okay. So thank you. It was a great investigation tonight of this chapter. And I strongly suggest that you continue to work with it and turn your attention to next week. And next week we're going to work with sacrifice number 7. Sacrifice number 7, once again, is the sacrifice of relationships. Life of arrogance. And we're getting a demonstration of it right here. That's how it works.
He's demonstrating a sacrifice.
So we know
it's exactly. Got a party there.
And let me tell you, that ain't kosher.
See, somebody sacrificing the pig then on the back.
For those who are only hearing the recording of this session, EJ just demonstrated the sacrificial pig in the background.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. It was great to be with you guys.
So thanks for everybody coming, and we'll see you next week at 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.